What's up, guys? This is Danny from Rethink Peer-to-Peer Lending. Welcome back to another interview on my channel. Today, I am joined by Lina, who is Chief of Strategic Growth at Profitos, correct?
Yes, hi.
Thanks for having me in the office today. I'm very excited to learn more about the status quo of Profitos currently in the market, as well as your expansion plans, for which you will be primarily responsible, from my understanding. So I'm very curious to get more insights from your side. Before we start off, maybe for the people to get to know you better, what has been your professional background so far, and what made you join Profitos then about 1.5 years ago?
Yes, so as you mentioned, I started at Profitos about 1 year, 1.5 year ago. And the reason why I came here, because Profitos started planning expansion into new markets, and I have experience in expansion. Because before I was, for over 20 years, I was working in the real estate development business. The Scandinavian type, and developing large commercial properties, and before that even I brokerage a bit as well, so I am familiar with the real estate market, and as real estate developer I also familiar with crediting and financing of such projects, so and cost structures and everything. So basically for me it was kind of a natural to look for some other opportunities, and I know the founder, Victoria, and Mindaugas very well from real estate business, and well, they promised me Spain, so, you know, I lived in Spain for 2 years, and I enjoyed it, so I really, you know, wanted to do something outside Lithuania or the Baltics even.
Okay, what do you mean exactly by they promised you Spain?
Because in the plans of Propertus, we have plans to expand to Spain. So that was the trigger that caught my eye.
Okay.
Basically.
Also, with the idea of you being in Spain to direct the operations in that country?
You know, I am experienced enough not to be naive that such operations and such you know, risks can be handled from distance. And I think everyone who has done ever any expansion in foreign markets, unless you have someone locally, locally meaning residing locally, or locals working, local team or partners working for you, then the business is very slow or actually is doomed to fail. So yes, we have plans to set up the team, either from like initially maybe somebody from here as well residing there, or finding the partner and very skilled team there. Because, you know, we don't want to be doomed to fail.
Okay. But sounds like in between the lines you wouldn't be opposed to have a couple of on-site visits once in a while in Spain.
I do once in a while without even Profitos having activities there. But I speak a bit Spanish as well, so I could even, you know, maybe interact in Spanish with some developers as well, or investors. So yet it's still like a bit different type of activity when you start doing business there.
Sure, and obviously it's still a way to go for Profitos, as we will find out soon about your expansion plans and what the targets actually are to go into the Spanish market as well. Maybe before. If there are some listeners or viewers out there that may be still confused about Profitos, maybe just a couple words on the platform itself and where you stand at the moment.
Okay, so Profitos is, and some people ask how it is spelled. So it is Profitos, not Profitas, not Profit, but it's Profitos. And we are a crowdfunding company established almost 6 years ago on a magic date of 8th of 8, so August 8th. And it will be so 6 years for us in our operation. So 6 years ago, we were launched as a platform. And since then, we have collected already and funded almost 200 million. And today our active portfolio is about 55 million. It's of course changes day by day and month by month, but it's about 55. Today we have 30 people here in the office. It's Friday afternoon, so you can see a few, but that's how we work. We work like remotely as well, so that's the way we promote the work here. And we are technological business anyway. The platform, the technology that we developed, it's ours. So this is one of our assets that we have, as well as the a database of registered investors. And we have almost 40,000 at the moment. And we have over 10,000 of active investors who have active assets on our platform. So everything we have gained through 6 years of hard work and a very dedicated team, I would say. Mm. And we have faced big growth since pandemic years. And we see, let's say last year, our portfolio grew over 50%. Funded amount over 35%, and that is more than the market did. And this year we have also ambitious targets to grow. Of course, in this market situation, which is a bit economic slowdown in general, and especially real estate, I would say stagnation for this moment, I think we are doing very well in that sense. Hmm.
There was a lot of interesting numbers and KPIs. Thanks for sharing those. Obviously a big key topic for me today is talking about the expansion, but I believe to understand like where you want to go in the future, we mm-hmm. need to understand where Profitus is standing right now, what is the status quo. And looking at the statistics, 92% of your portfolio is coming from Lithuania, from yes. your home market. So maybe can you just explain a little bit how big is the crowdfunding market in Lithuania and what is also the position of Profitus within this market?
So last year, total crowdfunding market in Lithuania funded over 230 million euros, right? And before a new ESMA regulation kicked in November, there were 23 crowdfunding players in the Lithuanian market. And since November, we have 12 active mm. players in the Lithuanian market. So it means that some of the players have not succeeded to obtain the new license. Of course, the new license have given opportunities to the players and for expansion as well, not only in Lithuanian market but in all other markets, and we will talk maybe about tackle that a bit later. But for us, just to say, last year we have started, the reason why we have 92% of our portfolio here in Lithuania, because last year were the first steps we have moved towards new markets. So we have a team who is working for Latvian projects and for Estonian projects, but until we received, we obtained the ESMA license in November, we couldn't start active funding and active attraction of investors in any of the markets away from Lithuania. And that is one of the reasons why now we are gaining pace and increasing, you will see increasing share of portfolio in those markets, especially in Latvia and Estonia for the moment.
Mm. Coming back to Lithuania for 1 second, you mentioned mm-hmm. The market was 230 million euro big mm-hmm. last year. How big was the market share of Profitus last year?
Last year we have funded 59 million euros, to be precise.
59, so yes. That's around 25%?
Yes, around 25% market share. And we were the largest ones, the leaders in with this amount.
Okay. And those close to 60 million euro, if we're just looking at Lithuania isolated, what do you think is, let's say, the target for this year, or the market can be only as big as it can become. I'm assuming with Lithuania being one of the more smaller countries compared to other European places, but how big could the market share of Profitos become without, let's say, compromising too much quality in your portfolio?
We expect there are forecasts that expecting that this year crowdfunding companies will fund about 300 million of projects. We expect that our share will be no less than the same as last year. Mm-hmm. So I would say 25-30%. And that's where we are heading to.
Mm. You said you were number one in Lithuania last year. Who are the main competitors in your market?
The second one was Rongen, if I remember correctly, 54 or 55 million.
So not too far off.
Not too far off, yes.
In direct comparison, without bad-mouthing your competition, but what would you say are the differences if investors look at Profitos, Rongen? How do they differ? As far as you can tell, mm-hmm. what do you see in the market? What do you differently? Or how do you distinguish?
Well, I think towards investors, we are both providers of business loans with mortgage, right? Collateral. So it's I think what you have to look inside is few things. First of all, is the risk of the portfolio. So you have to look into. The rating, you know, system itself, and I think we have different rating systems, and those are not comparable. So basically, if you go to our platform and if you go to any other competitor platform, you cannot compare the rate. They can be named the same letters, but they might not be the same, and sometimes that is tricky for investors to understand. So in order to invest into a certain platform, you have to get acquainted yourself with the specifics and algorithm or rating system of that particular platform, and to not blindly follow your logic, your own logic. This is first thing. Second thing is that I think Rongen is they are funding less projects in numbers, mm-hmm. but their projects are larger than mm-hmm. ours. So basically, we are offering a wider range of choice for investors in sense of portfolio, right?
And which helps to fund the projects quicker than?
Yes, assuming. Yes. We have this chance as well, right? And what is the difference between us two? I think primarily the starting point. From the beginning, from the scratch, we have built our platform and our business on the retail investor base, right? Mm-hmm. So our aim was always to attract more retail investors. And I must admit sincerely that only, let's say, 1 year ago, we have started working actively with large investors. So when we have decided that we need to grow more rapidly, we of course naturally came to the conclusion that and analysis that basically we cannot grow as fast as our retail database grows, right? So we need to add on with high net worth individual capital or institutional capital to add up to our portfolio. So that's what we have done. Let's say Rongen, they have started with a large investors database, and their average investment is much higher than ours. Mm. You know,
can you talk rough numbers? I think with Profitos, I saw statistics was maybe 130,000.
I'm talking about project size is about 100, but it's the project size here. You have to understand, it's not that the project is 130, but the stage as well. We count one stage as one project, okay. So that's the statistics, okay. Right? We have some especially larger investors who look at our platform and they say, "Oh, there is no we have nothing big." But actually, when you add up and if you see the 10th stage of the project, it means that they all clustered together, they can make 2-3 million in one project. So coming back to the investors' average investment in our platform, the average investment is about 650 euros. So that indicates that our base is retail. And of course, you know, we want to grow this larger investor share, but today our strength is retail. And what we have noticed that retail base saved us through many difficult weeks as well, because retail investors, they are less sensitive to the
market
to economics, the news in the news feeds, and so basically they react faster. And you know, if you would consider investing 500,000 or 500,
sure,
decision making process is a bit different, right? So that is the reason why we collect faster sometimes, and most of the times, and that's why even especially today we see developers coming to us for the reason that we can collect the amounts that they need actually. And some of competitors, they have they are encountering difficulties in collecting the money.
That's actually a very nice bridge to my next question, which is about the development companies that you work with. I'm assuming after 6 years in Lithuania, you have a strong network. What is the repeating rate you have among development companies?
I don't remember repeating rate, actually, but I know that we have some developers that we working since the beginning of the activity. So we are trusted by developers as well, and we are gaining more and more larger projects. So as we discussed about larger investors on the other side of the apple, we have projects. So if we want to increase our volumes, we also have to attract larger projects, and which means larger projects, of course, and not entering larger risks. We have to look for developers who are reliable, who are experienced, and that's why I think during last 1 year, investors have seen and encountered on our platform very well-known brands, known products as Car Wash Network, which is very well-known in Lithuania as well. We have also some redevelopment projects of very large developers. So we see that they are entrusting their assets to us as well. And of course, the funding needs go through us as well.
How many development companies do you have in your portfolio? And is there maybe a concentration, or do you put maybe certain limits on the amount of the volume amount that specific companies can fund through Profitus?
I will not say the number of clients, because you know, in real estate development, the specifics of real estate development is that you have typically a holding company with a lot of special vehicle companies for one project, and that's why we have clients who have several special vehicle companies for development, right? But approximately, I would say that if we have about 1,200 projects right now, so kind of it's about, I would say, 500 all the SPVs, I would presume as well. So of course, less of clients, right?
Okay.
But I think the most important is that you know, how we mitigate the risk, basically how we control that we are not dependent on one or two very large developers. So we have some yellow light and green and red light KPIs in our risk assessment as well. And one of those, let's say 7% of our portfolio cannot be in the hands of one developer, right? So, or one group, like one borrower, let's say that. So this is one way, one of the many ways we try to keep our portfolio healthy.
All right. Yeah, risk management is obviously a big part in expansion fantasies, I would say, and expansion targets. When we get closer to expansion, I would like to split this up in two parts. One is looking at the markets and the kind of targets you have in those. The other part is how you want to finance your expansion, which you have already hinted at a couple of points. But let's start off with the markets. We know from the statistics 92% are coming from Lithuania right now, 7% Latvia, and then 1% combined for...
You mean projects, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Combined
mm-hmm.
for Estonia and Spain. Are those markets the core pillars for your future growth? Are there any other markets? What are the current plans where the growth is supposed to come from?
For the nearest, I would say, 2 to 3 years, these are our pillars for growth. And it might seem that we have very aggressive growth plans compared to your interview, as you mentioned, 1 or 1.5 year ago. But in fact, we are for sustainable growth. And we have as one of our strategic target is to become number one in Europe, in European Union. But as we explain it and as we understand it, it's not becoming everywhere. You know, it's not becoming available everywhere. We want to, because the crowdfunding market is measured, first of all, primarily by funded amount, right? And funded amount is something that you can achieve in 1, 2, 3 markets, not necessarily being in all 27 or 28 markets of Europe, European Union. So we have chosen to be in these countries, in Baltic countries, because that's our home market. That's what we naturally know, do, and it's easier for us to understand them. Also for investors, maybe we'll talk a bit about like investor strategy of ours, but you know, it's a bit of this cultural neighborhood thing that you presume that you know your neighbors like Latvia or Estonia, and Estonians presume that they know or are familiar with Latvia and Lithuania. So there is some brotherhood here as well, and that helps us promoting the projects and attracting customers. On the other hand, why Spain? We see that Spain is a very big market, and when we speak Spain, we don't mean the whole Spain from the very beginning. It is very regional business there, so we want to go region by region, basically, and there are a few reasons for that. I would say that alternative financing market is pretty undeveloped in Spain. Of course, there must be reasons for that, and that one of them is all risks related to with mortgage, and we have to be aware of them. And of course, we know that here we are used to act very quickly, and we are getting ourselves ready to adapt to a bit slower pace, slower processes, longer terms in Spain. But still and yet, this is an attractive market in terms of development and the future, in terms of lack of access of capital to developers, and we see the opportunity there. And that is the reasons why we want to focus there, not to jump from one market to another, basically to avoid failures that, you know, and to learn maybe some from other cases in the markets too.
I know there's a lot of elements that go into expansion plans, but for me, I'm personally someone that always likes specific numbers, that is very like analytical. So can you share like specific targets that you have? You say growth is measured primarily by volume. So how much volume do you want to fund in those respective countries coming this year and then maybe also next year?
Mm-hmm. Well, we think that we expect that Latvia and Estonia, they can generate up to 20 million a year easily, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
already next year?
Yes, I would say so. This year we cannot expect that, but I would say Latvia, we can easily reach, I guess, 15 or 18 this year because we are getting there much faster. But yes, there is no like reason why this is not. We see no reason today why this should not be achieved if we like work and put all the effort that we have put here in Lithuania to build it up. Spain is very large market, so we don't expect those millions in Spain next year. We expect this year to start building the team, basically, and start building the processes, basically. So we will start from looking for the projects that we want to test and go through the all the mortgage process and build it up very safely, securely, and not to jump into the market, chase for high funded amounts or any like profits, and then you know have it to experience defaults and failures and etc. So we don't want that. That's why with Spain we have moderate expectations for this and next year. For that, of course, we also need to raise capital for expansion, and that's what we are going to do this year. And before that, we will be very kind of just observing and getting ready with all the legal risk assessment, valuations, valuation partners, and all that stuff.
Mm. Can you give me a better understanding? Because I understand the natural desire for companies to grow, to expand. At the same time, they claim like, okay, we want to be like sustainable because we see bad practices in the market where some companies have been a bit too overly aggressive mm-hmm. and now have to pay the price, or especially their investor base. And now my question is, how do you ensure this sustainable growth? So you mentioned like, okay, you're starting to set up the teams, you follow like, okay, which players are in the market, who are the partners that you can work with, build up the infrastructure. Do you have specific KPIs maybe, or let's say, do you have a roadmap where you know, okay, now we have enough data gathered from certain projects, now is it like we have a good amount of data that we can now go ahead and try to be maybe a bit more drive a bit more risk in those markets, or just like have a more, you know, more aggressive approach? So how long is this cycle maybe mm-hmm. to gather the first experiences to get you an understanding, okay, we are good on track, we can now deeper into the market, if it makes sense?
I'm trying to get your question right, but let's say I guess that, you know, Baltics for us are pretty much clear, you know, mm-hmm. because the fundamentals of our risk assessment and legal frame basically legal environment, I would say regulatory environment, how we treat all the banks of these three countries, players, they are somewhat very similar, okay. You know, so this is for us the mentality, and we pretty much understand it, right? So of course there are differences, we have adjusted to slightly different systems and structures of mortgages in Estonia, let's say, for example. Meanwhile, there are some similarities and differences in Latvia as well. So this is, but them, those for us are pretty much clear, you know. So we do not change our strategy, risk strategy towards the projects in the markets. Mm. And actually, I would say vice versa, you know, the larger you grow, the more conservative you have to be. And that's what we are chasing here, that the larger we grow, we do not be we do not want to be very tolerant to new coming projects, because of course the volumes are increasing and there is a chance of missing something, and a chance of overviewing something is increasing as well, right? So actually with volumes we become more conservative than vice versa. And Spain, I would say it's a completely different world, which is also new for us. We don't pretend we know Spain, right? We know where it's nice to go for holidays or that Spain has nice food, but we don't pretend to understand how Spanish market operates, right? And that's why we don't jump into spotting projects. Actually, we have tried, we have funded one project in Tenerife and in Spain in islands, but that was a bit different. That helped us to look into all like processes and you know, to look how it works, where can be potential pitfalls and characteristics. But in this case, we have funded it because the collateral was in Lithuania, and that was for us pretty easy to manage, you know, to decide, because they needed the money for a project in Tenerife, but the collateral was in Lithuania. Okay. So it was like we don't call it like pure original Spanish project. So we want to really make sure that we understand and we build the process so that basically even to manage our expectations, right? Mm. How fast we can promise money or provide money to developer, right? How fast is, for example, in case of default, we can manage to get the funds back and etc. So all these questions, even before they occur, they need to be answered before we enter into some larger projects, especially and gaining volumes in these kind of countries.
Interesting. I'm not sure if you can comment on this, but I'm curious about the European crowdfunding license. To which extent does this license also dictate how you need to perform your due diligence? Because from my understanding, there are quite a lot of requirements that have to be checked. I think maybe in Lithuania, even the certain list of suppliers that you can use for evaluating properties, so only that are listed in certain directories, if I'm not 100%, if I'm not mistaken. Can you comment on how much the regulation is impacting also the way you perform your due diligence, and is it more beneficial from your perspective, or would you rather have, I don't know, assess it more in a different approach?
Well, if you ask my colleagues, you would hear a lot of swear words about new regulation, because new regulation has demanded a lot of adjustment from our side in terms of technological adjustment, in terms of documentation, in terms of processes. Like everything became very, very crowded suddenly, and it was very difficult to for developers, for the clients to understand, for our borrowers to understand, because suddenly, you know, we were like much lighter in our documentation requirements compared to traditional banks, and suddenly we started and we were called "you're almost a bank" many times, believe me. So the new regulation we believe that this is better for the market, right? Because what happened before ESMA is that different markets were regulating crowdfunding differently.
Yes.
And that created a lot of misunderstandings, more risks for investors as well. So basically, let's say in Lithuania, this crowdfunding was always regulated since back 2016, I think. Meanwhile, in Estonia and Latvia, they were, like in Latvia specifically, they were very lightly regulated, let's say that, right?
Yeah.
So they were, let's say, unequal terms for the players, right? But from the investor perspective, you were still a crowdfunding company, right? So I think this regulation has brought much more security and insurance for the investors. Definitely that protects investor interest much more than it used to be in all the markets. And that's a good news. And
does it also help you?
Definitely, because you know that also prevents us from taking on risky projects, right? Let's say mandates us to dig deep into the project, to analyze not only the asset but analyze the borrower very deeply, and analyze all the default probabilities of default, the market environment and everything. That's why we have launched and renewed our algorithm completely, and so this is for the sake and the benefit of risk management, naturally. So although we swear about it, we are even joking that somebody there in the European community, they just took the banking documentation, deleted few clauses, and that became a crowdfunding regulation, because it became very, very close to banking regulation. But you know, we have to adjust, and we are a technological company. That's why we have automated a lot of processes. We have automated increased the flow of our processes in order still to be faster than banks. You know, we need to have this
competitive advantage as well,
yes, as well. Otherwise, they might be difficult to even compete with other financial institutions.
Hmm. Can you briefly to wrap up the market aspect? Can you briefly explain from the first projects you funded in other countries what kind of, you talked about pitfalls, things that you found out from having the first project? So let's say maybe some markets appear to be more profitable than Lithuania, some are more complicated from another perspective. So what are small nuggets of observations that you can share so far from this expansion journey?
For us here in the Baltics, because the world treats us as one market, we sometimes forget that we are not one market, you know. And I think this brings also sometimes surprises for us and for our investors as well. And if you look to our portfolio, if you look to our platform, you will most probably notice that, for example, our Latvian markets, they typically have a bit higher interest rates than similar projects in Lithuania or Estonia. And that is market specifics. Through like many years, interest rates in Latvia have been higher than once in Estonia or Lithuania. So this is something not that we have created, but this is something that market dictates, right? Also, alternative financing in Latvia is pretty low, so that also, access to capital is important to developers, so they are ready to pay a bit more as well than let's say in Lithuania or Estonia to get this access to capital, right? So this is one.
So more profitable than Lithuania.
Yes. Latvia is more profitable than Lithuania in general, but of course there are differences in economies as well, you know. So Latvia is a very stagnating economy for a while now, and that of course keeps us very, very alert on the projects that we choose. That's why we don't, let's say, if you will see a bit maybe smaller projects here in Lithuania that we go to, but in Latvia we want really to go to very like sound projects and good partners basically with proven track record, because we want naturally projects to succeed, right? And we don't have the target to take every project that is coming from Latvia as well. Estonia is today is the sentiment in Estonia is pretty low. In general, the consumer sentiment is very low, and that prevents the economy from growing. Because compared, we don't see many, let's say, we have three countries and three very different sentiments. Lithuanians, for some reason, they are very positive, although like we have very one big neighbor with the same threats, all three of us, you know, so it's so kind of that holds our economy running, you know, and we see that Estonian sentiment is very negative, and that prevents like growth in economy and naturally spending. And where the spending is cut or shrunk, then you have naturally investment is especially in housing industry is shrinking as well. So, so the reason we are entering right now there, there are a few reasons. You know, there are a few. Theories when to expand, you know, so there are expansion in good days and there are expansion in bad days. So we believe that the market will regain pace and will recover. Maybe we will not encounter the same golden years as back in 2018, let's say, or 17, but the market will recover, and typically construction market is recovering with a bit of lag behind the economy, let's say half a year to 2 years lag. So we expect that by that time when the construction market will recover, we will just be ready with all the infrastructure and all our risk assessment processes. So that is one of the reasons as well.
That's actually a good point, because how do you work in line also with the economic situation? Now we see like the interest rates are starting slowly to decrease, which I'm assuming might be a positive sign for your business.
It is a positive sign for developers. You know, that the cost of funding is decreasing. That's why we say that to our investors that, you know, the best time to fix your interest is today, you know, because tomorrow or in half a year, you like they will decrease because the overall in the market they will decrease as we are. Operating under like in the environment of fixed interest, this is the right time to invest into like projects of your own risk taste.
One thing you mentioned, and now I want to switch to the second part of the on that growth element, which is the financing. You pointed out already that in the last year you started to work closer with high net worth individuals. First of all, what's the definition, or at which volume does one be considered as a high net worth individual, and how much did they make up from, let's say, the entire portfolio last year?
So we define here that our high net worth individual is the one investing over 50,000 euros in one project and having about like over 300,000 euros portfolio. But as we are building our investor database, so we still say, okay, 50,000. They start with 50,000, then adding on. So that's still we. If they have invest, if investor has invested 50,000, we already say it potential high net worth in investor.
You have it on the hook.
Yes, we have it on the hook. So this is one. As for the volumes, last year we have collected 13 million from high net worths.
13.
Yes, so that that accounts for approximately 22% of our funded amount. And it just worth to mention that this is from mainly private individuals and businesses and family offices, but we don't have yet any institutional investors. For this year, we already collected over 7 million, not counting in June, because we still don't have June numbers. Until end of May, we have collected 7 million from high net worths. And we hope to finish the year approximately with 27 million in general.
With slight increase in the second half of this year. The question obviously is with expansion standing in front of the door, who's financing the party? So apparently you're very eager to attracting those specific let's say pockets, this high net worth individuals. thoughts about institutional investors. So how will they in the future stack up, so to say, against retail investors? And do you also have specific KPIs, how you want to ensure, let's say, an equal amount of opportunities and possibilities to fund the projects on Profitus?
So let's say maybe to start from the pie, basically to start what is our target for the composition of investors, right? We, in our strategy, we have defined that we want to remain a retail investor platform. Mm-hmm. So basically, we do not have a strategy to become mainly dependent on large capital. So we say that when the normal amount of large capital in our portfolio would be between 30 and 40% of large capital, and then the rest from retail. And having said that, you know, we come to the point where ESMA license provides us much more opportunities. Let's say Germany. We don't need to operate in Germany or to open up the branch in Germany to access German investors, right? Mm. Any other European markets, right? So we, the only thing what we need is to passport the license in that particular market, and then we are. We have the right to attract investors, right, in that market. So we will be working very intensively this year, next year, with the KPIs that are related with attracting retail investors and increasing the retail investor database. Like, for sure, a must for us. And today, about 95% of our investors' base is from Lithuania, and only 5% from other 37 countries in the world, the largest being Germany, in fact. So we still have huge capacity that we have not accessed. So, you know, and this is Lithuania is like 3 million country, and with only 4% investing community in general, you know, yeah. So actively investing community. You have in Germany, you have the habit and history of investment is much longer than us. We have to invest into education of investors here in Baltics for sure, in Spain as well. That's what we do, and it takes time to build that. But we see that the proven track record, and that's why we need this large capital to cover the gap. Before we build the retail database, we need large capital also to be a big issue in order to cover the gap between like retail database capacity and the funded amount, right? Mm. So that's where we want to secure institutional investors, high net worth investors to invest into our portfolio of projects until we not only until but with the growth of our portfolio, but also with the growth along with the growth of retail database. Mm.
Can you talk on a practical level how you ensure, when you, let's say, the equality among the different sources of funds? So when you have high net worth individuals that, you know, maybe want to invest 50,000, 100,000 euro, mm-hmm. do they in particular want to fund one project on their own, or do they like to sit in the same boat as many retail investors? And to ensure, let's say, a kind of equality, what are the principles that you want to apply? Mm-hmm. Is it maybe, let's say, the first 3-4 days only retail investors can fund the project, and then, you know, maybe it will be filled up with X amount from bigger funds? So how does it work on a practical level?
According to like a regulation demands that we are providing equal possibilities and terms for all investors, right? So we cannot promise different returns for the same invested amounts for different investors, and that what actually is very strictly regulated. What we do, like most crowdfunding companies, and as elsewhere as well, if you buy in bulk, you get cheaper, right? So here we also, if you invest more, you get a better return, you know? So because like the amount that you are investing and risking is higher. So that's why we have so-called steps of investments per depending on the investment amount, which you will find in every project in our platform. And those are defined individually together with developer and defined before the project goes online. We have very different high net worth individuals. We had few who said, "I would like to be the sole, investor into this." We don't do that. You know, we are a crowdfunding company, and we had last year, I think, one project specifically. I remember that we had three investors, those are very rare cases, and now regulation does not even kind of, I would say, does not prevent us, but does not encourage us let's say this way, we have an interest that typically the projects that are interesting for large investors, they are definitely interesting for our retail investors. So if we will be offering something off the books, which we actually cannot do, we will not be trusted by retail investors, and we will not be, fair to the retail investors as well. So we, as a crowdfunding company, we commit to our investors to share information and to give them the right to and time to get to know the project, the developer, and invest. And an experienced investors, they have even this consideration term that of 4 days to revoke their investment if they, you know, if they believe that they have changed their mind or they want to increase the amount that they invested or decrease. So it's there is more flexibility for investor to invest nowadays as well.
What is the financial situation of Profitos as a whole?
Today we are in expansion mode, and expansion means also cost. We have analyzed our last year, and 2 years before we were profitable already. We were operating in Lithuania and we made profits, which was very nice that we can do that. And naturally, last year we were getting ready for expansion, and that increased our cost. Let's say my salary, and also I came here for expansion, not for work in Lithuania.
And not to work for free.
Well, I don't think anyone in business want to work for free, right? So we are in expansion mode, every time when it's very hard to work and see that you are not, it's like not enough every month, but expansion, that's what the it is, right? Typically you expand early, you spend money earlier than you receive money. Sure. When you gain income and profits, so we are patient on that. For that reason, we really want to, of course, attraction of investors costs as well, retail especially. So we want to attract additional capital to Profitos to fund our expansion in Estonia and in Spain as well. So that's what we are getting ready to do that during next quarter, actually.
So how big was the deficit last year?
It's official. It's we had minus 400,000 last year. So we don't expect that this year will be profitable, that, we know the cost of expansion, we still think that our operations in Lithuania, we strive that our operations in Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia are profitable separately, taking away the cost of expansion like in Spain. So that's our target. I think that, and that is like a normal business that I wouldn't say aggressive in that sense.
I came, or I was aware that there was a smaller circle of investors having small fundraising round last year.
Yes.
Around 500,000 euro, half a million. You pinpointed at it that is there an additional fundraising round required this year, next year? And if so, like, do you go public this time, or how is it going to play out?
We just talked about it today, in fact, and initially we think we will not go public, but because we have an interest of some investors that are waiting for us to start raising capital. So we will see how it goes, and if we see that we are encountering some difficulties of filling up the demanded amount, we might change. We are a very agile company, so we say that, you know, we want to be agile, we want to be maneuvering and adjusting to the market situation, to the investor needs, to the regulation, to our financing needs. So kind of today we have a plan that we will go directly to investors, to few investors, but you know, who knows? If not, then we will. We still have options B and C.
Sure.
To go for.
So you try for the more inner circle, and from your network that you have, what's the target? How much money do you want to attract?
We counted that we would need up to 2 million for our expansion in active expansion in Spain, and primarily Estonia and Spain.
Hmm. All right, good numbers. Thanks for sharing, Lina. That was it so far from my side. Any things to wrap up? What can you maybe share with investors directly? What is to expect at Profitus, and why they should potentially join Profitus or stick to Profitus if they are already on the platform?
Well, I hope that you are finding our platform very easy to use. And I think nowadays technological business is very focused on user-friendly interfaces. And we are trying and doing very hard every day to improve this experience. And we will be actually improving it even more. We will be launching during summer Auto Invest, so Robo Invest function or product that will even help investors to create their own strategies and invest even easier. We are very. We will launch the app. Actually, I don't know, by the release of this podcast, I believe there will be an app available already on Google and App Stores.
Towards your birthday, right?
Yes, birthday. Yes, towards the birthday. So that you know, might be an even easier tool to use. You know, I would recommend to be wise in investing. I have laughed that when I started here, I tried the investing into platform in 3 months after, you know, start of employment here. And I said, okay, I will invest 200 euros. And because I still need to know how this platform works. And so now I have a portfolio of over 50,000. Mm-hmm. And that is addictive. So I know it can be addictive. But I still suggest and recommend to really look into the projects, read the information. If you have any questions, we have our customer care team always ready to help. Because investment is related with the risks involved, and of course we all have different risk tolerances. Sometimes, like, you might want to try one or another type of sector that is not familiar for you, but, you know, be ready, like, to, as you know, as gambling, you know, like, you'd be ready to lose the money as well there, and so be wise in planning your investments, that one. And of course, if you have any you know, recommendations or things that you are missing on the platform. You know, we are very, very glad to receive sometimes good requests or suggestions from investors, and very eager to listen and develop features that are important to catch up with the market and with the trends. And we hope that, you know, we will be providing only like good sound projects that will be improving our German language in the platform. You know, it becomes, when you become international, sometimes it becomes very difficult to track correct language, especially specific language as financial language. But we are doing our best. So I really hope that we will thrive and, you know, grow steadily, sustainably, and provide, you know, the best experience for investors who are investing in our platform. And of course, you know, if you have anyone, we have a recommendation program on our platform, which you can actually get some benefit as well from recommending to your friends or family. And that's what I'm using very much, actually, myself.
Sign up link in the description below. And then also, for the sake of your own portfolio, maybe an idea of getting a loyalty program in. So there might be additional interest then for the investors that have a couple more funds to spare to Profitus. So that might be something you can benefit also directly yourself then.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, we have, I think, more... Anyway, we have a lot of investors who like to compete. And we have a specific feature where you can see what kind of, like, where in the investors... list you are. So we have some investors who say, oh, I've fallen out of top 20, I have to invest. So define your own ways of investing, because I think what can be is the money in your bank accounts not working for you. So I think choose your own products, choose your own strategies, and invest, and you know, get your dreams come true.
Get your returns.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Lina. Thanks for your time.
Thank
all
you
the
very
insights
much.
And answers. Continued success then for Profitus for its expansion path.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.